The following message was recorded at the 2011 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
Today I'd like to introduce our speaker, Jason Webb. Jason is a lead pastor of Brook Life Church in Naguanico, Wisconsin. Brook Life launched in 2008 out of Elmbrook Church. Jason's passion is to see ordinary people live extraordinary lives. Prior to Brook Life, he was on the pastoral staff of Elmbrook Church and Nairobi Chapel in Nairobi, Kenya. Jason is married to Heather, who is also pastor of Brook Life, and for the last 11 years, they have served in various ministry capacities together. They have three kids, all six and under, which makes life quite interesting. So, Jason.
Thank you. You should probably wait to decide if you want to clap at the end. But my name is Jason. I'm so glad that you're here and taking part of this seminar with us. In case you're in the wrong room, this is a seminar on church planting. In fact, when Steve asked me to give this seminar, I thought to myself, who in the world at No Regrets is going to show up to this seminar? But I'm excited to see people did, maybe because other rooms are full. I'm not sure. But if you didn't know why you're here to plant a church. And so this is what we're going to talk about today. One of the things I want to do, though, is get a sense as to where people are at in the room when it comes to church planting. So what I want you to do is turn just for 30 seconds, turn to the people next to you and say, answer these two questions. When you hear the words church planting, what comes into your mind? And secondly, what are you doing here in a seminar on church planting? Where are you at in that journey? So go ahead, turn and talk, find somebody next to you, introduce yourself. All right. I'm Jason, by the way.
Tulio.
Tulio. Yeah. Nice to meet you.
I'm running about church planting. I hear about making disciples. And I'm planting a church, a Hispanic church in Jamesville.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah, sure. So when are you looking to start? Have you started?
Oh, we already started.
Oh, great.
Yes,
when did you start?
2008.
Okay.
Wonderful. We have 1 year.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
We focus on the spirit of today, just making, reaching a believer, training them, making the same. They're the one that helped me out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's great. Wonderful. That's great meeting you.
Thank you.
All right. We can gather back here. Let me just get a sense from all of you, just real quickly here, is why are you, how many of you are here because you are thinking about planting a church in the future? Wow, a lot of you. How many have already planted a church and you're here for help? All right, very good. How many of you are just on staff at churches just thinking about church plants? Anybody? All right, very good. Well, if you were to ask me about 8 years ago, what do you think about church planting? I would have said these words, no way, no how, not for me. That's a job for fake pastors, not real pastors, people who can't make it in the real world. I don't want to move into a gymnasium. I want a nice auditorium. Don't bother me with church planting. Doesn't take, it takes way too long to grow. It doesn't match my gifts. No way, no how, not me. I was finishing seminary, however, and we were going through this assessment process at the seminary, and somebody at the seminary said, you know, Jason, your gifts seem to line up with being a church planter. And I said, no way, no how, not me. You go find somebody else. Then I moved to Nairobi, Kenya, where I was on staff at Nairobi Chapel, which is a leading church in East Africa, partners with Elmbrook Church here. And one of the annoying things that happened there is that the DNA of that church got into my blood, and part of their vision was to plant 300 churches in 20 years. And they're well on their way to that. When I got there, they had already planted more than 20, and they said to me about a year or so in, hey, we want to multiply our one main campus that had several thousand people, and we want to multiply it in one day to five different locations. Would you help us launch one of those locations? And I couldn't say no way, no how, not me, because I worked for them. And so I went ahead and I helped them with that. And as I started to do that, I realized, okay, God, I'm getting what those assessment people said a long time ago, that maybe this is for me. Maybe this is something you want me to consider. In the process of doing that, Elmbrook Church came to us and said, after your 3 years here, Jason, would you and your wife, Heather, come back, serve on our staff, and then after 2 years, launch a church for us out of Elmbrook. Now, I do realize that church planting out of a mega church like Elmbrook is more like church cheating, not church planting. I do realize it's not fair. But we said, yeah, we'll do that. And we came back on board. And after a couple years of serving here, we decided to launch a church in Maguanago, Wisconsin. And even though I never considered that it was the road for me, I got to tell you, it is the most amazing thing you can ever be a part of. It's the most challenging thing you can ever be a part of. It's the most frustrating thing you can be a part of. Yet it's the most rewarding thing I've ever been a part of. I'll never forget standing in the water at Phantom Ranch Bible Camp, which is in Maguanago, after about 6 months of being at our church, after we launched, and as I was baptizing 41 people who had recently committed their lives to Christ, I thought, okay, God, this is worth it. We can do this. So today I want to talk about church planting, and I want to fly through a ton of material I have today. And we will not cover all this stuff that's in your handout, but I really wanted to give that to you more as a resource as you go forward. I want to tackle three questions. First question is this: why in the world should we plant churches? For those of you who are on this journey or have already been on this journey, you probably understand this, but I think it's important to start there. Why do we plant churches? Well, the first blank, and you're going to have to, you know, blanks are just because we don't want people to fall asleep during our seminar. So the first blank we want you to fill in there is the first reason we plant churches is because the American church is in crisis. It's in crisis. Ludwig Wittgenstein said this: if you want to know if a man is religious, don't ask him, observe him. And I think he's right. 76% of Americans say they're a Christian, but listen to these stats that are on your paper there. Only 17.5% of people attend church on a given weekend. That's in 2005. 9.1% evangelical, 3% mainline, 5.3% Catholic. On top of this, and many of you have probably seen this in your churches, the idea of commitment to a local church is very different now than it used to be. In fact, Gallup recently did a poll where it says that people who say they're committed to your church probably only attend one or two weekends a month. That's pretty common. We see that in our church. Population growth has significantly outpaced church attendance growth. The only place that is happening where church growth, new church growth, and population growth are coinciding is Hawaii. Yet another reason to move to Hawaii, in my opinion. In order for us to keep up with population growth, just to keep on par with it, 10,000 new churches need to be started every year. In 2050, if the trend continues, only 11.5% of people will attend church on the weekend. Not to mention the fact that there's a missing generation in churches. According to various studies done by the Pew Forum on Religion in Public, UCLA, Time, and most Protestant teens are leaving the faith and leaving church after high school. I've seen this in my ministry. I'm sure you've seen it in your ministries as well. A little bit closer to home, Wisconsin ranks as the 10th least religious state in the U.S., if you're from Wisconsin, which I'm guessing most of you are, that's our reality here. By far, the number one least religious state in the Midwest. Forbes magazine ranked Milwaukee as the drunkest city in America. So what's literally happening is that people aren't going to church on Sunday morning because they're hungover from Saturday night. It's just our reality. Many of you well know that also Milwaukee is ranked as the top segregated, number one segregated city in America. We are losing our voice in society. Gabe Lyons did a significant research project called Unchristian. You need to get that book if you don't have it, where he asked non-Christians what they thought when they heard the term Christian, and these were the responses: anti-homosexual, judgmental, hypocritical, proselytizing. That's the number one, not top four reasons people give when they hear the word Christian. He also says this in his new book, The Next Christians. You can see it there on your page. Many churches are exhibiting increasingly less and less real influence in the communities where they are located. If they were gone tomorrow, one can't help wondering if anyone would notice. We have a major problem here. The church isn't doing something right. The American church is in crisis. And so that's why we plant churches. But there's a better reason why we plant churches, and this is the second thing there. It's because the church is still the hope of the world. Now, of course, Jesus is the hope of the world, but he manifests himself through the local church. I love this quote from Bill Hybels. He says this, maybe you've read Courageous Leadership. There's nothing like the local church when it's working right. Its beauty is indescribable. Its power is breathtaking. Its potential is unlimited. It comforts the grieving and heals the broken. It builds bridges to seekers and offers truth to the confused. It provides resources for those in need and opens its arms to the forgotten, the downtrodden, the disillusioned. It breaks the chains of addictions, frees the oppressed, and offers belonging to the marginalized of this world. Whatever the capacity for human suffering, the church has a greater capacity for healing and wholeness. No other organization on earth is like the church. Nothing even comes close. So for as many things as we get wrong in the church, the one thing that we have going for us is that Jesus exists in the church. That there's a supernatural component of the church. And so we believe with the core of our being that the church is the hope of the world. We believe that Jesus' words are actually true when he said, I will build my church and the gates of hell won't prevail against it. And as pastors, that is a hard thing to believe sometimes. Just a couple weeks ago, I was dealing with some dumb complaints from our congregation. I was dealing with some trifle issues on our staff. And I thought to myself, okay, Jesus, you say you're building this church, but sure feels at times like this isn't happening. See, we have to believe in the core of our being that the hope is still the church is still the hope of the world. The third reason, and I think this is really important, and it's related to this, is because church planting is by far one of the best reasons or ways to reach people far from God. It's one of the best ways to reach people far from God. In fact, you see this throughout Acts. You see the first seven books of Acts, church planting going on in Jerusalem. You see the next five books, Acts 8 to 12, church planting in Judea and Samaria. And then Acts 13 to 28, church planting in the rest of the world. All because the apostles understood something, the followers of Jesus understood something, that one of the most effective ways to reach people is by starting new churches in their community. I've seen this firsthand. I've seen this in my, we have our small groups, we call them house groups alone. I remember a guy came into our house group and he told us up front, you know what, I don't believe in God. He had come there only because his son came to one of our student ministries events and said, hey, Dad, you need to check this out. His wife showed up as well and she said, I haven't been to church in 30 years. And yet just last summer, we baptized their entire family. And that's what happens with new churches. People are willing to give a new church a chance when they had written off the traditional established church. Maybe you've seen these churches, these stats before, but they're very important. And they're very important as you move on in the life of your church. Note this. Churches less than 3 years of age see an average of 10 people come to Christ per year for every 100 church members that they have. Churches 3 to 15 years of age see an average of 5 people come to Christ per year for every church, 100 church members that they have, already dropping in half. And this is really sad. Churches 15 years of age see an average of 3 people come to Christ per year for every church, 100 church members that they have. It's just the reality. New churches reach people far from God better. I think that's why Peter Wagner, who's a church leadership expert, says that by far the most effective way to win people is by planting churches. So why do we plant churches? Because it's in crisis. But we plant church, more importantly, because we believe that the church is the hope of the world, and it's one of the most effective tools to change communities and to reach people far from God. So that's just some kind of foundation that I wanted to lay. But now the part that I want to spend the most of our time, the majority of our times on, is this. Am I ready to plant? Or if you've already planted, what have I gotten myself into? Because there's some issues that come as a church planner that we need to wrestle with. And some questions that I think we need to ask ourselves. And the first question is this. You can write this down. That you need to ask yourself, why am I planting? Why? You know, a good friend of mine not too long ago started a church mainly because he didn't like his job at a bigger church. He was mad at the whole concept of big church, and so he just started kind of out of bitterness. I think a lot of people start churches that way. It's not surprising that his church folded within a year. Another friend of mine had issues with his boss, and so he launched his own church. About 2 years into it, we found that he had bigger issues than that, that he was taking money from the church, that there was other scandals going on, and he lost his church, and I'm pretty sure he's going to lose his family. See, we have to have the right reason to plant churches. You know, right now, church planting is kind of the sexy thing to do in the church world. There's a conference that I actually tell you to go to at the end of the packet called Exponential Conference in Orlando, Florida. It's a gathering of church planters that happens every April. That's grown from just around 1,000 when I first went to it about 4 years ago to more than 4,000 people coming every year to this thing. Church planting is the in thing to do in the church world right now. But don't you dare plant a church because it's the in thing to do. And don't plant a church because you're mad at your boss or you don't like the system. You plant a church because you love people. You know, it's all about people. It's about understanding that God has this incredible heart for people that are far from Him. That's why Jesus said, "I have come that they might have life and life in its full. I have come to seek and save the lost." That's why you plant churches. And if there's any other reason other than to bring God glory by reaching people far from Him, just stop. Don't do it. So the question you need to ask yourself first is, why am I planting? Second question, we're not going to spend long on this, but it's kind of a given, but it's amazing to me, especially guys, we don't always think about these things. The second question you need to ask is my family supportive? Is my family supportive? And by supportive, I'm not saying, are they willing to go along for the ride? But are they excited about it? You know, if you're married, is your wife, is she excited about this? As we'll talk about in just a few minutes here, how intense it is. Is she excited about the journey? Does she have as much invested in this as you do? Because you need to be on the same page. It's just like having a kid. If she wants a kid and you don't want one, that's not going to work out really well. Maybe some of you have gone down that road before, but that's just the reality. You need to both be on board with this. Your family needs to be on board. Question number three. This is a huge one. Have I embraced the reality and the risk of church planting? Have I embraced the reality and the risk of church planting? Ed Stetzer, who, if you haven't read him, he's really kind of the leading expert in church planting. He said, when the church planter's expectations meet the reality of the church planting experience, the chance of survivability increases by over 400%. That's based on a study he did of literally hundreds of churches across denominations. And that's very true. You know, when we start to think about church planting, we think of the great stories. We think of Rick Warren, who's one of the great church planters. His church has planted a church every year, and now he has a church of thousands. But what you don't know is that for several years, his church was just 100 or 200. We think of Rob Bell in Grand Rapids, whose church went to 0 to 10,000 in 1 year. And we say, I can do that. That's going to be me. But the reality is, you're not in Michigan. You're not in California. You don't have the same situation. And you can do everything that those people did. You can do it even better than they did. You can be a better speaker. You can be a better organizer. You can be a better leader. And in the end, it still depends on the Spirit of God moving in that place. In the end, it still depends on factors that are beyond your control. So not only will 1,000 sometimes not come, 100 may not come, 50 may not come. It might be you, your wife, and your dog at the first service that you hold. And that's just the reality of church planting. You see there on your handout just kind of a chart of the average attendance for church planting. And year one, the average attendance of church plants across the U.S. is 40 people. By year two, you creep over the 50 mark. And it takes till year four till you're even closing in on 100. Now, of course, there's different stories, some bigger, some smaller. But that's after studying more than 2,000 churches in their church planting journey. Not only that, you'll see the next chart. It says the percent that have survived a church plant. First year, almost every church plant survives. Very few church planters are willing to give up after the first year. Second year, it drops a little to 92%. But by year four, only 68% of churches that started still survive. You know, we were fortunate. Like I said, we came out of a mega church, so we had people who came with us, and a bunch of people showed up for the first weekend. So we kind of knew that we'd be able to survive from that mode. But one of the things I wasn't prepared for in church planting was just the reality of it. I remember one Sunday we showed up and the sidewalks weren't shoveled. And there's no volunteers around. I was out shoveling the sidewalk up until about 5 minutes before I was supposed to preach. I got up there. I fell asleep in the back room before I was supposed to get up to preach because I was so stinking sore from shoveling the sidewalks. That's just the reality of church planting. Another week, we meet in an elementary school. We pulled our trailers up to the gym and realized it was -5 degrees outside, and the locks to the trailers were frozen shut. And we started thinking to ourselves, okay, Jesus didn't use microphones. Do we need to use microphones here for church? We had to go and get a blowtorch and blowtorch our locks. And nobody ever told me in church planting that you needed a blowtorch to survive. But the reality is, you do. I mean, it's just not always that exciting. And it can be painful. And you have to have your expectations in line. You know, we started off with a bunch of people, but then we dipped a little bit. And we've grown some again, but we're not growing nearly at the rate we were. We're just kind of plateauing right now a little bit. It's church. It's life. It's messy. You got to keep your expectations in line. God can do great things, and he can do amazing things. But you need to grasp the realities and risks of church planting. Question number four. And this is a much more serious question. I want to park here for a little bit. It's this. Am I ready for intense spiritual warfare? Am I ready for intense spiritual warfare? C.S. Lewis writes this in Screwtape Letters. There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. Barbara Bush writes this, war is not nice. And it's not. It's not nice. Apostle Paul, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. I think Tom Neville, who leads the GBC's Converge movement of church planting, amazing man, is right when he says that church planters seem to be highly susceptible to the attacks of Satan. That church planters, Satan seems to have a bullseye on church planters. And the reason I think this is the case, because he doesn't have to attack churches that are dying, they're doing the work for him. He has to go after people who are trying to penetrate into new areas and reach new people that aren't connecting with God. I think there's a few ways that this happens. It seems, and there's several stories about this, of church planters just being attacked in their health. Another way that church planters seem to be attacked a lot, and we'll talk about finances, is in your finances. I remember about 2 years ago now, we had to launch a campaign for a building project that we're in the middle of right now. And I was standing in front of a group of about 100 leaders from our church, and I felt compelled to tell them what my wife and I were going to sacrifice for the project, and I stood up and told them the number that we were going to give. I mean, we didn't even have the money, even close to that money, in the bank. And it was just a huge risk we were taking, but we felt God was compelling us. We were so sure God was asking us to do that. Well, I went home from that dinner that night, and I was still cleaning up, helping the volunteers clean up, and I got a call from my wife saying, hey, our basement, which we have a bi-level, so a bunch of it's all finished off, our basement is flooded, completely flooded. Then about 2 weeks later, somebody came and fixed our dishwasher, and they messed something up, and more water came from the ceiling down into the basement, flooded it a second time. A week after that, a pipe burst in our basement, flooded it a third time. A week after that, we found more flooding in our basement, flooded it a fourth time. A week after that, our septic tank, which wasn't due for inspection for more than 6 months, overflowed and flooded it a fifth time. Five times our basement was flooded in less than 2 months. I don't think that's a coincidence. And it cost us thousands of dollars to repair all that. And then not too long ago, in the fall, when we were doing something similar with our church, the same thing happened when we made another financial commitment. More flooding. Again, happened. See, we're susceptible to spiritual warfare. Another area that's huge, and I want to be very strong on this one, is your marriage. If you are married and heading into church planning, just know that it will come under attack. And the reason I think this is especially true for guys is that in any job, we have a hard time clicking off. We kind of obsess about our job. We think it defines us. But when something is riding on our shoulders like it is in church planning, it can become such a burden that we never switch it off when we get home with our wives. Never forget being at Exponential, that church planning conference I told you about, and hearing one church plant leader after another get up and say these words: "I almost lost my wife. My wife told me she was going to file for divorce if I didn't change. My family nearly fell apart during that time. I don't know how we survived." Just this past week and a half ago, my wife and I went on a marriage retreat together because we know we have the scars of church planning. So be very, very careful as you walk into that. Know that any crack in your marriage that you say is not a big deal now will become a big deal when you church plant. Another area that is huge for church planters is discouragement, depression, and fear. This is a really uplifting seminar so far. I do realize that. My boss in Kenya, Oscar Mareu, just an amazing man, once told me, he said, leading a church is the loneliest place in the world. And I think some of you could probably attest to that. The depression, just what you feel, people don't get, and they don't understand. And it makes it even worse as a church planner, because the number one question people will ask you week after week is, are you still growing? How many did you have? It's almost like one word. How many do you have? You know? Are you hitting the marks? Is your graph going up and to the right? Are things going the way that successful churches are supposed to see happen? And you just have this fear of failure. Another thing that can happen is you can have community backlash. You know, one of the things, we went into this church plan and we wanted to wrap our arms around the community that we were in Maguanago, but we didn't realize that while we wanted to wrap our arms around the community doesn't always want you to wrap your arms around them. Our first weekend, like I said, we had a bunch of people show up, and the next day, I mean, we're all real excited. Next day, I get a letter from the school district saying, we didn't know that many people were going to show up, and we're not sure that you can ever meet in our schools again. And I was like, I thought they'd be happy. I thought they would celebrate with us, but no. And it took several months of negotiation for us to just work with them to get a compromise. They didn't necessarily want us there. Now, God's done some amazing things and actually really not only repaired that relationship but made it a great relationship. But those things happen. The other thing that happens is you get leadership backlash. People will leave your church plant. If you're in a church plant, you've been going for a little while, you will see. My mentors and coaches told me, the people who start off with you will be the first people to leave. And I said, no way, no how, not with me. I'm likable. We're good. We're good to go on this thing. But I also know that some of our key families that were the first to start off with me have blasted me and said, I don't want anything to do with this church anymore. That's the reality. It's not always a bad thing. It's just that as they begin to see how the vision is unfolding, they realize that their expectations don't match up with the reality that you are now pursuing with this church. It happens. In fact, I don't know the exact stats on this, but I've been told usually the launch team that you start with, usually about 50% fall off of that and go back to whatever churches they were at. Other things that happen, you'll be very tempted with your sin struggles, sexual temptations. And let me just give you some helpful things that I use to help with spiritual warfare. A couple of things that I would encourage all of you to have is an accountability partner. You got to have that in church planning. I meet with a pastor friend of mine each week. Secondly, I would encourage you to have a church planting coach. I'm 3 years in and I still have a coach because I need him to help me just along the way, encourage me, challenge me. I meet 1 to 2 times a month with him. I need a Christian counselor. I'm not sure about you, but I need counseling. I need somebody that I can just say, help, I don't get the darkness that's inside me. Can you help me with this? Here's my fears. Because a lot of times as pastors, we don't have those outlets to really talk openly with somebody about what we're dealing with. I need that, and I encourage you to have that as well. I often say I'd like to have my counselor just kind of follow me around everywhere I go throughout the day. Certainly would help me. Other thing that really helps is a pastor's network. If you can just get a network of people together who just are going through similar things, it just helps a ton. I meet regularly with some of the church planters that are actually here today. Mike Moran from Kettlebrook Church, Mark White from The Ridge. These guys are just, they're like brothers to me. We just meet and we talk through stuff. And then obviously a prayer team. I have a prayer team that prays for me weekly. And then if I have special requests, I fire them to them. So spiritual warfare, be aware of that. Fourth question is this. Am I wired to be a church planner? Am I wired to be a church planner? You'll see that, you know, church planning is not for everybody. It really isn't. DISC profile. Anybody taken the DISC profile before? A few of you? What's interesting, DISC profile, it's the first D is dominance. You're an entrepreneur. You're a bit controlling sometimes. You want to make change. You like to challenge the status quo. I is influence, leaders. People follow you all the time. You're up front and out front. S is steadiness. You relate well with people. You're a team player. You help maintain behind the scene. And C is compliance. You're a thinker. You like to shape environments with quality and accuracy. Anyway, what's interesting about this is that stats have shown that those who are high Ds and high Is, the dominants and the influencers, as far as just pure attendance, and that's not always the best way to measure a church, but pure attendance have a much higher attendance of church plant at their church plant than those who are S and Cs. Now, this is not saying that if you're an S and a C, you can't plant a church. It's just saying the type of people that tend to do have a little bit easier of a road are the people who are more upfront and out front. I happen to be a very high D and a very high I, and a lot of the church planters that I know are that way. However, I would make this caveat. If you're looking at a different style of church planting, maybe house church planting or different things like that, S and C can work, actually are much more preferable than D and I. A couple spiritual gifts that are necessary in church planting. Now, you don't need to have these necessarily yourself, but they are necessary to have overall. Evangelism. Obviously, you're trying to reach people far from God. I do not have the gift of evangelism yet. Obviously, we're all called to evangelism, but I've brought some people in that do have that gift. Faith is a huge one. I mean, you kind of have to be a nut to plant a church because, yeah, you're believing God for things that are unseen right now, and that's what faith is all about. Apostleship, you have the ability to move into an environment where things are different. Leadership and preaching and teaching. One of the things that is often a big myth of church planting is that people assume that you can kind of lay back on the preaching. I think actually the opposite is true, that you need to devote as much time as you possibly can to preaching because people are already skeptical walking to, let's say, a school gymnasium to have church. And if they see you kind of fumbling up there, they're going to be even more skeptical. Tom Rainer in Surprising Insights from the Unchurched says that 97% of people say that preaching is the main factor that decided as to why they decided to come. And this is especially true in a church plant. One of the things I'd really encourage you to do is go through some sort of assessment prior to deciding to plant. There's a free online assessment you can do. I put the address down there. There's also assessment centers. I did that. That's really helpful. Question number five, who's going with me? Who is going with me? Luke 10, Jesus sent people out two by two, and I think that's important that as your like kind of core, whether you pay them or not, staff team, typically there's three initial roles. Again, this can vary, but what most people say, the three most important initial roles are a lead person, a worship person, and your children's person. And we found this to be the case. I remember talking with our person who became our children's pastor, and I told her that we hadn't started anything, and I said, I want you to come on our staff. I can't ever promise you to pay a salary, but I want you to work for me for at least 30 hours a week. Will you do it? And she said yes. It was awesome. I mean, it was amazing. God put her in my lap. But that's the kind of ask you have to make of people in church planting. Question number six. I'm just going to throw this one out there. You can see the notes there. Where should I plant? Where should I plant? That's important. Some important factors to consider as you move forward on that. Question seven is this. How will I support myself and my family? Ed Stetzer recently just put out a big post on the seven top issues planters face. And the number two issue was just financial survivability of the planter and the church. Options for salary are denomination, a church planting organization, or a sending church. That's obviously the easiest way. You can raise support from churches and friends. You can do a combination of the above two. Or you can go bivocational. I know many people do that. One of the things I would caution with that just purely is that if you see yourself as a church having a full-time pastor, it's better if you start off that way, if at all possible, because it'll be hard to shift towards that later on. So those are the questions you need to ask yourself as you begin to take an inventory of how are you wired, what are you doing, and now I want to shift to more nuts and bolts. I told you we're flying today. I have about 7 days worth of material in this presentation. So say that you decide, okay, I am wired for this, or you're already in it. What are some steps to take? Some of this I'll just give you the blanks to fill in, but this first one's real important. Just pray some more, and then pray even more than that. And one of the things I was amazed at when I came to McGuanago to plant a church is that some of the people on our launch team had been praying for our church before I was even born. I mean, it just blew me away. And we had found out that there was people that have been praying regularly for the last 10 years for this church to open. I myself, I'm not really good at prayer, and maybe you aren't either, but I prayed like I've never prayed before. I wrote in my prayer journal again and again, God, give us McGuanago, give us McGuanago, give us McGuanago, because it's so, so important. If Jesus is going to build the church, you have to ask him to build it. You have to go to him and depend on him. The second step is this, develop a compelling vision and values for your church. Develop a compelling vision for your church. Without vision, Proverbs says, the people perish. And my boss and my mentor in Nairobi Chapel said this, I'm not sure how theologically accurate it is, but it works for me. It says, we must have visions that make God sweat. That you and I need to have visions that make God sweat. You know, I think a lot of times the visions we put out for our ministries and our churches and our lives are things that if we just try really hard, we can do it. We have to take whatever that vision is, multiply it by 10, think about that for a while, then probably multiply it by 100. We need to have visions that make God sweat. The next few pages are just examples of churches and their visions, just for you to give a sense of what they have going on. You know, we say at Brook Life that we're becoming a community of high-impact followers of Christ, and we're going to do that in five ways, releasing resources into our community, multiplying at every level, reaching people far from God, doing life together, and now I'm forgetting one of them. I should know this. I'm the pastor, right? What? Thank you. You go to our church. All right, great. Thanks. Joe's from our church. Empowering the next generation. That's what we're going after. And you can see a couple other examples there that I just pasted from the Ridge Church, which is a phenomenal new church in New Berlin, and from Kettlebrook Church in West Bend. But you need to have visions that inspire people that make them want to believe that God is going to do something supernatural here. If you don't have that, people aren't going to follow you. They need to have you lead and lead strategically, lead with authority, and lead with passion. Step number three, recruit and equip a committed launch team. Recruit and equip a committed launch team. Some important considerations as you do this. Interview each potential launch team member. I actually attached a sheet at the end of your document that tells you, that's the interview I did with, I think it was about 80 people. You want to make sure people are jumping on board with you because for the right reasons, not because they're ticked off at their church or they're going to bring their baggage to your launch team. You want to, yes?
Can you repeat number three?
Oh, sorry. Recruit and equip. I know I'm flying. Recruit and equip a committed launch team. Recruit and equip a committed launch team. And that if you're already planting, you need to continue to recruit and equip committed people. But especially in the launch team, you need to be careful not to have it made up of people who are leaving their churches because they're mad at them. Because they're just going to bring their problems to you at a time when you need people who aren't going to bring a bunch of problems but are going to be committed to the vision and values of what you're trying to do. Now, of course, your church needs to reach everybody once it starts. But on a launch team, you need to have people who aren't bringing a bunch of their baggage from the past. You need to ask them to support the church financially by tithing immediately. I would ask them to sign a covenant. I've attached one for your saying that they'll commit a year's service to the church. You need to give them ownership of the ministry and equip them and keep them accountable to reach out to friends, family, and neighbors. Again, this is about reaching people far from God. Unless you get that in right away, people aren't going to do it. According to New Thing Network, which is a network we're actually part of, it's a church planning movement. If a church is going to immediately break the 200-person average attendance barrier, you will need 39 adults on your launch team. Kind of a random number, but that's what they found. That churches, obviously, you can see that happen with less, but that's just the common stat that they're seeing. So you need that launch team. That's very, very vital. And then related to that, step number four, determine and develop strategic ministry teams. Determine and develop strategic ministry teams. You need to release this ministry to the people. You cannot do all the ministry teams. And you also need to determine as you think about this, what are the most important ministry teams up front? And if you're in a church right now, you've been going for a little bit, maybe you started with too many right away. We did that. We started with student ministry. We weren't ready for student ministry, and it was completely dysfunctional at the beginning. And thankfully, we solved that issue. But I was ending up having to lead our student ministry on Wednesday nights, and I was so busy, I was driving from my house to the house where we were holding our student ministries, not having even thought about it during the week. I was preparing the lesson in the 10-minute drive between my house and the student ministry thing. You can't do everything. Some things that you'll definitely need right away, communication, outreach, kids, worship arts, and small groups. The rest can wait. One helpful idea is to create a large matrix on a board with every leadership role that needs to be filled, and with your launch team, just fill it in. Just fill it in. And if you're in a church right now, maybe you should do that as well. Step number five, develop a presence in and serve the community. Rick Russo, who wrote The Externally Focused Church, says that a church needs to be in a community at least 8 to 9 months before it should ever launch a public service. You need to be serving that community. People need to know that you care about that community. And I put a bunch of things down as to what you can do, all the way from random acts of kindness to adopting a school. One of the things that we decided to do right away to kind of bridge the issue that we're having with the school district is we decided to finance the tutoring program at the school where we meet. And like I said, that step alone solved a lot of the gaps we were having with the school district. And not only that, it's what we should be doing in serving our community. Step number six, develop a long-term financial plan. Just as you need to develop a plan for yourself financially, you need to develop a plan for the church financially. Ed Stetzer said in his church survivability study says that even after year five, most churches, over 60% of churches, are still not self-sustainable financially. So it's a tough road. It's not easy. One of the things you have to be aware of, and I remember being so excited after coming home from the first weekend where we had a bunch of people show up, and I was so excited, especially to see the giving numbers the next day. They gave nothing. They seriously, it's like they put maybe a dollar in the plate as it went by, and I thought, God, how are we supposed to serve? How am I supposed to minister to that number of people with this amount of money? I mean, it was crazy. But the stats on giving is that it takes people who are now decide to attend your church about 18 to 24 months to catch up with their giving. So even though you may have people show up, they're not going to give. And so that's why it's equally important, and I know this is hard to do for some pastors, you have to teach about giving. And you have to teach about it often, and you have to teach about it unapologetically. You have to teach about it wisely, because people are very skeptical of the church and money. But Jesus talked about money all the time. So we need to talk about it. And you especially as a church planner need to talk about it. You also need to obviously take into consideration what the costs are of starting up your ministry. I would develop a finance team devoted to this as well. Step number 7, we're not going to spend much time on this, but secure the best possible facility. Secure the best possible facility. You'll see all those questions. I'll leave you to that. Sometimes we just make dumb decisions with facility just because it's the one available. You need to think through a lot of things. There's a lot of questions, and you can all see them there about what you need to ask and what you don't need to ask. Step number 8, you can flip over to the next page. And I'm not going to spend long here because this is a very boring part, but you need to develop church constitution and polity of your church and your governance structure. You just need that for incorporation for your 501c3. Step number 9, and I can get, if any questions on this stuff, I can connect you. You can email me. I can get you more information on this stuff later on. Step number 9, this is very, very important. Connect people into small groups. Connect them to small groups. If small groups isn't the way you do it, connect them somehow. One of the things that I really encourage you to do is to launch groups prior to the public launch of the church. It's a way of connecting people on the periphery of your launch team. And it's a way to cement relationships. And it's also an amazing breeding ground for leadership development for you. What we did is we started with about 6 groups. And we said to those 6 groups, we want you to only meet for about 6 months. And after 6 months, we're going to take leaders from within those groups so that when we launch this church publicly, we'll have a bunch more groups to start. And that happened and is a great, great thing for us. Step number 10, develop a strategic marketing plan. I know some of you cringe when you hear marketing, but it's very important. God is creative and he wants us to use our creativity as well. Remember that your website is the front door of your church. It is the front door now. It's not the doors people walk through. Your website is your front door. So if it looks unprofessional, people are going to think you're unprofessional. Newspaper, postcards are very effective. And at the back, you'll see a resource of companies that help church plants mail out creative postcards to people. Word of mouth, though, that's by far the best way. Step number 11. Practice church. Prior to the public launch of the church, have a couple of preview services just to work through the kinks, get people a sense of it. And step number 12, launch a weekly service. Launch a weekly service. And you'll see some ideas there as to when the best time is to launch. Then finally, connect. Step 13, connect, commit, and equip people immediately. Connect, commit, and equip people immediately. Churches that provide leadership training for new attenders increase their survivability by 250%. So you need to have immediate connection. Think of what are the most strategic ways that when a person comes in this door, that we can connect them immediately to the life of the church. One of the things, simple things like having a place at the church where people can connect and you can talk to them. We do a handwritten letter from the church after a visitor comes. Some people do phone calls. Email is less effective, but can be effective. Nelson Searcy, you'll see it there, has a great lot of information there. And step number 14, and most important thing, despite all those logistics that I just threw at you, Watch God move. Watch God move. Remember that at the end of the day, you can do everything right, but if you aren't following God, it's not going to matter. This is His church, and He's going to build it. Yes? Watch God move. Oh, 13. Sorry, that's the three-part one. Connect, commit, and equip. Connect, commit, and equip. So that's church planning. And let me just say one thing before we wrap up here. It's worth it. I'm telling you, if you're thinking about it, you feel you're wired for it, God has stirred something in it, go for it. Because it will change you, it will change your community, and it will change the world. Churches are the hope of the world. So we encourage you, if you have any questions, I'd love to just talk with you briefly. I have to run and do another seminar somewhere else, but I'd love to connect with you, and we can go from there. But let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I thank you for this group of men in this room. I thank you for their heart for churches. I thank you for their heart for you. I thank you that they're dreaming about what you could do in and through their churches. God, I pray that from this room, a movement of churches across the United States, across Wisconsin, across the Midwest would happen. And I pray that thousands of people would come to know you. God, we love you, and we know that this is your church, so we say, take it and multiply it and build it. Amen. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen. Thanks, everybody.